right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
We kind of touched on this last week. We got a really interesting topic. We teased on it. Well, some other things.
We're going to talk about, I did some little research and it was all in the article, though. I got a cool word, right? So we're going to be talking about apophenia. Apophenia, I think, is the way you say it. Apophenia.
Apophenia, so is that the name?
So everybody should know exactly what we're talking about now, right? Because, I mean, apophenia. Yeah, so that's what we're going to be talking about. Stay tuned.
That's right. So before we start that, we've got to, as always, our customary segment, do our tasting. So,
absolutely. You want to bring up the old sponsor?
Yes, indeed. Go. All right.
I feel like we should have some old-fashioned, like, breaking news, you know, sounds there.
Like kind of like the Fox News, you know, they break, or the CNN, they kind of break with the red alert, you know, just to, I think they get an alert going like every 5 minutes now. So.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So I'll let you do the spiel and then I'll talk about the beverage from our sponsor.
This week's segment is brought to you by our sponsors over at the Original Craft Beer Club. Outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the U.S. As you know, craft brews have exploded in popularity over the past decade. There are thousands of awesome craft beers being produced by microbreweries all across the country. And one of the best ways to sample these unique beers is by letting our friends over at the Original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork. And Sean's going to be doing some of that legwork because he's got one on today. And he's going to be introducing that. By the way, you can learn more by visiting them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craftbeer. And you can learn all about their monthly or bi-monthly, however you want to set it up, their membership programs where they bring a variety of beers straight to your door. You don't even have to go out and get them.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't left the house in 6 months, so but the beer keeps coming.
That's
so
fantastic. All right, what do you got? What's on tap today?
I have got an Optimal Wit is what it's called. So it is Optimal Wit, unlike our humor on the show. So this is a Belgian-style wit beer. It's only 4.9% ABV, so I have two of them today. Uh-huh. But it's a low, like 12.5 IBUs. Okay. So, but it says brewed in the traditional Belgian style, the Port City Optimal Wit is crisp and citrusy with layers of flavor that evolve in the glass. Like this is big stuff, man. Mm. Brewed with 100% Virginian grown wheat and the perfect balance of spices that include Spanish orange peel, not just any orange peel, Spanish orange peel, coriander, and grains of paradise. This brew leaves a lasting impression. And my friend, this is a double gold medal award winner.
Wow.
So
what year? We'll see.
I don't know. That's a good question. French too small to read. I don't know. It actually doesn't say,
matter.
It was like best beer. And then it was the best wit beer as well. So,
right. How is that? How is wit beer spelled? Is that the
W-I-T-B-I-E-R? Okay. I think. Yeah.
All right.
Man, it's light, super light.
Wow, 12 IBUs too. I mean, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it shouldn't be like an IPA if it's a Belgian style, so it's not going to have that cloudy. It's very clear once the fizz goes away. But so anyway, very light drinking beer. So what do you have over there in the big town of Louisville?
Straight from Bavaria, the Bavarian part of Bavaria, the Bavarian Alps. Somewhere we've got our friends over at Schultzbrau. We've had a Schultzbrau on before, and I cannot remember. I'd have to go back and look. But this one's, I haven't had this one. This is a double or a Doppelbach lager. But this is an 8.2% lager.
Wow, that's pretty heavy for a lager.
Yes.
Lager.
Schultzbrau Brewing Company.
Let's see that can again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at so many different angles here. All right.
I know. Wow, that's fancy.
Yeah, they've always got that the logo with the
coat
shield.
Of arms.
Yep, the coat of arms and everything. So.
All right. pop that sucker open. And then I think you said, we have our guest has a drink. So probably just bring them on and then so I'll let you announce our guest and bring them on. Don't forget to hit that button that you're supposed to hit when they come on.
Ah, that button. I've got that button ready.
All right.
Jimmy, is it Shabbat?
Shabbat, yeah, you said it right.
Shabbat, welcome to the show. We got to give Jimmy some applause.
All right.
So Jimmy is going to be, we're going to get into your bio here in a second, Jimmy, but you have brought a beverage. Sometimes our guests don't have a beverage. Sometimes they have we actually let them on with a bottle of water sometimes, but that's okay. But you've got something really good today.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad my assistant has done an excellent job preparing me for this, because after seeing your guys' intro, I'm a little bit, happy that I'm prepared here. I'm not as sophisticated as you guys with your craft beers here, although I am with a whiskey. I'm normally a vodka drinker, pretty simple vodka on the rocks, but she's like, it's craft beers or whiskey. So I'm like, all right, you know what? Perfect. I was given a gift last Christmas for a Japanese whiskey, and it's a Hakushu.
Cool.
You can see that it's a 12-year single malt.
Yeah, very nice.
I'll sip it, every now and then, just neat. And it's, it can knock you on your ass. It's a different kind of buzz than your normal vodka drink.
Yeah.
For your craft brew. So it's nice and subtle. It's a great buzz. So it'll get me to relax here for our, for our nice little podcast.
Very nice. Yeah. I've had I think Suntory is one of the Japanese whiskeys I've had. That's really good. Super smooth. You can go through half a bottle and not even realize it. It's crazy. It's just,
yeah, you don't, oh, smooth. You got through a half a bottle.
Impressive.
Yeah, I got introduced to it. I went to a whiskey bar, and I'm not much of a whiskey drinker, but I had a couple of those drinks and I was like, wow, this is different. And so I shared that experience, and then I got gifted a bottle. So it's good to have in the office here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool.
Cheers, guys.
All right. Cheers. Now, is that one you've had before, Jimmy?
No, this one's a new one to me. I think I've had the same one, Sean, you were talking about. Again, I'm not as familiar with whiskeys, but I mean, I've had this drink before tonight or today. Mm-hmm. But it's a good whiskey.
Cool. So I know you don't drink a lot of whiskey and bourbon. We usually give a score of 1 to 5 pints on the show. So of your just beverages that you've had, you can either do just whiskeys or just, liquors in general. Where would you put that on a scale of 1 to 5?
Oh, it's up there. 4, 4.5, somewhere around there. It's got a really nice kind of finish where you can feel it going down, and it kind of just heats up your core. So it lasts. I would probably want to put some ice in it to kind of chill it a little bit and water it down, because just neat, it's intense.
I love my neat. I do have some whiskey stones to make it a little cooler if I want. Every once in a while I'll do a splash of water. It's supposed to release some stuff, but I can't really tell the difference.
Yeah, those big ice balls I usually would use.
That's what I use. I've got the tray that makes the really nice round ice balls that you just put in the freezer, drop one in.
You have the Death Star kind?
Ones absolutely. That look like the Death Star. Yeah, I get a little, I kind of chisel out a little piece there to make it look authentic.
It looks good too. It's very impressive looking when you've got that big round ball in there.
Yeah.
But my wife, she laughs at me. She's like, you wuss, because she'll drink bourbon. So that's my choice is bourbon. Yeah. And my wife will drink bourbon too, but she likes it straight. She likes it neat. Can you believe that? And she pokes fun at me when I put an ice cube in there.
You got a winner there, man. You got a winner there.
I usually, it's either vodka or tequila. I like a nice tequila, and I'll drink that both ways. Usually I'll shoot tequila, drink vodka.
Right.
But they're both good. It's a good whiskey that I have here today.
Very good. All right. So you gave your rating, Sean. Time to rate yours.
Yeah, I'm going to give mine I'm going to give it 2.7. I don't love it. I mean, we're dark beer guys, but this is the second and third sip was better than the first. I think it's airing out. It did say it would evolves in the glass, so it seems to actually be doing that.
Yeah, that was interesting copy. Evolves in the glass.
So I guess as it air outs, it gets you know, it's better. The flavor is good, but it's not at all like an IPA. It's more, it's definitely got more of that citrusy Sam Adams kind of feel to it. Sure. The Belgian.
Yeah.
It'd be really good in the summer, I think. I mean, I'll give it a 2.7.
But it was a Spanish citrus, right? Didn't you say it was a
Spanish orange peel? Yeah. So, I have notes for all that, so it's not like we're that smart, Jimmy. We're just that's the cool thing about the original Craft Beer Club. Is they send you notes with your beer.
That's
so
right.
You know what you're getting. So it's kind of cool like that.
So it's John, great for a schleps that we can talk about, and we can, it sounds impressive to our audience. Smart. But we even have some trivia that Sean throws out there every now and then.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah. That or we bring on guests to make us look smart. That's our other little hack.
Nice.
So Jonathan, what do you rate that? Yours?
Oh man, I'm gonna give this one a 4.3. Wow. It's really good. Really good. Wow. It's a lager, so I love lagers, but I feel like it's a little sweet, but I don't think it's too sweet. It's a pretty nice balance there. So 8.5 2 for a lager, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's pretty stout, but it's not. It's a lager.
Yeah, so, I mean, look how dark. I mean, that's
it's pretty dark
for a lager. So I like it. 4.3.
We have a Facebook user comment that says hello. So that's it. That's all it says. So, hello.
Hello. Hello, Facebook user. So, Jimmy, we got to introduce you. You're the, first of all, what part of the country are you from?
I'm in Buffalo, New York.
Okay. Ooh, awesome.
I heard I've got a coworker that's up there. Mm. He said it was like -2. He's in upstate New York. I don't know where exactly, but was it cold there today?
Chill. I mean, I've lived here my whole life, so it doesn't really bother me. So when it's -2 or 20, it feels the same. It's cold. I will say that. It's the toughest part of the winter.
Sure.
But it's chilly.
Are you a Bills fan?
Yes, I am. I mean, I got to be proud of what they did this year.
Absolutely.
It was disappointing last week.
I was pulling for them. I was rooting for them last Sunday just because, you know, the Chiefs, they went there last year. So
yeah, they got their title. Yeah. So, I mean, we've been there 4 times, but we still don't have a title. It would have been nice. I would have been happy actually just going to that.
Sure.
And even losing. But it would have been a great matchup versus Brady because he's had our number for 20 years.
Oh, absolutely.
So it would have been an interesting storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, that's the one of the first, like, you know, dynasties. Of course, you had 49ers and stuff.
Yeah, right before.
You know, and then I remember growing up with, like, I remember the Bills going with Jim Kelly going back and back, and I was like, man, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Then you had the 49ers and, you know, Cowboys in the early 90s. So
I had a friend in high school. He was a huge Buffalo fan. He was from New York, and he'd moved down to my
– How did a high school – oh, he moved down. I was going to say, how did a high school kid from Georgia even know Buffalo existed?
Yeah, he was a guy from New York. He was a transplant here. And, man, I just – it was during those years, during those early 90 years where it was just one year after another Buffalo was making in.
It was a fun ride. I was, you know, a teenager during those times. So, you know, my formative years in sports, and it was just heartbreaking. And then we went into a drought, so –
Yeah.
It was nice to come out of that in the past couple of years. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
Well, we're going to be, do you want to do a bio, Jonathan?
Yeah. So Jimmy, after all of that talking, we want to welcome Jimmy on. He's the CEO and founder of Zizzo. Is that Zizzo Technologies?
Yeah. Zizzo Technologies.
Technologies, which is a workforce gamification software company. And while gamification, of course, is different than a traditional gaming company, Zizzo focuses on providing a complete gaming experience instead of just gaming elements applied at work. So this is going to be interesting. And what we're going to be talking about is not only, you know, Jimmy's background, what they do, but we're also going to be discussing a article that I sent you, Jimmy, that was we recently discussed last week, or we kind of touched on last week, but the title of it is A Game Designer's Analysis of QAnon. And one of the interesting takeaways from this article, and that's why we wanted to reach out to you, was that there's a lot of correlations behind some of what hooks so many people into things like QAnon or other conspiracies that are elements that are taken directly from gaming. And I found that fascinating. You know, I don't know if you had a chance to go through the article in full, but I was just blown away by it.
Yeah, it was ominous. I mean, it was a bad thing. I think everybody, even if you're non-political, the past couple of years have been really, you've got to be, if you're not involved in it somehow, you know, you're hearing about it every day. Right. So, of course, QAnon is kind of like a subcategory of one side that, you know, people call it the right and conspiracy theorists.
Right.
And when reading that article, I mean, it was eye-opening for me as well. I mean, I didn't realize just the in-depth and kind of manipulation of and how it relates to gaming. And we'll talk about how gamification has some relationships with it.
But yeah,
quite an interesting read for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the article is called, Game Designers and Analysis of QAnon, which we better not say that too many times. We'll get our YouTube channel delisted or something. But I mean, yeah, this idea of apophenia, which is, I think I got the definition here. So, cause I know not everybody knows that definition. If anybody knows it, it's the tendency to perceive a connection or meaningful pattern between unrelated or random things such as objects or ideas. And, you know, how much of our own story that we want to, and this is not new with Q, right? It's been around with, you know, Illuminati, Bilderberg Group,
sure.
Masons, like anybody that's trying to do any tracking of those things, they've kind of come across these quote clues and you start bringing your own biases into this. So Jimmy, like what part of the gamification process that you guys do, and if you want to kind of explain a little bit about what you do, but then and we'll kind of talk about what are we tapping into to persuade people to really just, you know, just fall into this stuff in a big way.
Yeah. I think there's a correlation. I don't know if there's necessarily a relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe I'll start with kind of gamification. And gamification kind of taps into those extrinsic motivational tools that people read, like rewards and avatars and recognition. Things that help keep people engaged. One of the things that gamification helps solve, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with the problem of attrition in today's world. Specifically, it's not just millennials, it's millennials and Gen Z. They're very distracted. They're very disengaged at work. And that leads to a very high attrition rates, which costs businesses a lot of money. So, you know,
now, are you talking about from an employment perspective or a customer?
Yeah. No, from an employment perspective. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, as an employer, you know, you're looking for ways to create a work environment that's engaging, that's fun, and that will keep people working. With millennials, it was more about kind of having something that they're a part of bigger than just work. Right. So you get a lot of these big corporations that were kind of supporting different charities and having purpose, you know, in life and employees kind of, you know, they like being a part of that. This younger generation, Gen Z, they've been nurtured since birth on technology. Right. And if you've ever seen a 1-year-old pick up an iPad, and just the amazement of how quickly they just adapt to using that and just scroll through it. I mean, that's that generation, that's Gen Z. And, you know, they're in our workforce. And by 2015, between them and the millennials, they'll represent 75% of the workforce. So it's a time to change management styles. You know, we want to revolutionize the workplace management tool. So we're leveraging the things that this generation has been conditioned on, you know, whether it's social media apps, video games, you know, anything that has to do with technology, I think you've got to deploy that as a tool and a resource to help keep them engaged at work. So that's what we're doing now. What apophenia is, you know, what it reminded me when I read that, it's almost like, do you remember back in the days that the book where you're like, if you want to decide this, go to this page. If you want to this, go to that page and kind of pick your own storyline. And it was a little bit of that, but more ominous and more with a community, right? And a much larger community.
Sure.
And I think our nation was primed, you know, for that level, that type of manipulation, you know, because people were trying to grasp and try to create some sort of unity. And there's a lot of division in our nation, unfortunately, now. So that's why I feel that there's a sense of correlation, only because we're kind of both leveraging the psychological aspect of technology. And, you know, they're using it, what I think is for a bad purpose and more malicious reasons. I don't actually know their purpose or their reason, but yeah. We're trying to use it to help people stay engaged and stay employed for their own sake as well as the business's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the article, and I guess we'll post that in the show notes, Jonathan, a link to the article.
Absolutely.
Really well written. Like you said, very eye opening, but one of the first things it starts with is they were testing, you know, this idea of one of those like clue rooms where you go into, and they had a design. They kind of knew what they were, and they, you know, they wanted to see how people react. So they were watching the people go in, and there just happened to be like three random like pieces of a stick on the ground, because it was a dirt floor, like a basement type thing. And people immediately assumed that was a clue, because it was kind of sort of shaped like an arrow pointed towards like a wall. Mm-hmm. And like, everybody jumps to the conclusion that well, it's here, it must be a clue.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, and then from there, it's like, everything must be a clue, you know, and it's kind of, if everything's a clue, then nothing's a clue in my opinion. But it's so hard. Do you have any idea, Jimmy, like what is that part of the brain that has to make those connections and has to have meaning?
I mean, if you've ever, played a puzzle, right? And usually puzzles have an ending, right? And so, you know, there's a sense of accomplishment that people have when finishing a puzzle. And I think that's part of what they're talking about, is one, the enjoyment, the journey of solving a puzzle first. And I mean, what they're using, they're playing with a much, much bigger sandbox with limitless, right, possibilities and really no end in sight, where puzzles usually have an end. So the scary part of what this article kind of talks about is the fact that, you know, we're easily manipulated and we're leveraging things that we're, again, conditioned to do, and what we're really motivated by to use, you know, psychologically to keep us engaged. And, you know, that example that you mentioned with the arrow, and they use the term, it's like a Scooby-Doo easy kind of, yeah, clue. Yeah. And they didn't go for that. They went for the less obvious, but seemed more romantic, I guess, kind of clue, because it led to even a bigger clue. And right. So it's, again, that problem solving kind of mentality that we have, that we like to be a part of a process that gives us enjoyment and it ends with a reward.
So so I'm curious, shifting back to the business world, mm-hmm, how do you create these endpoints, right? Because business never ends, right? I mean, you're always kind of there being employed, and ideally you'd like to keep that employee as long as possible.
Sure.
Kind of reminds me, I think Simon Sinek wrote a book this past year, The Infinite Game, yep, where he views business as more of an ongoing thing than like a game where it's ended, where there's a finite game. Goes back to the quote, you know, finite games and infinite games, mm-hmm, that book. But so how do you keep people engaged without like frustrating them? Because, you know, at some point you get frustrated if the clues keep being clues and you don't ever get any resolution. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you balance that?
Well, I mean, gamification is a little bit different than gaming. So when you talked, Jonathan, earlier about how we bring the gaming experience, not just gaming elements, right? Mm-hmm. Or gamification elements. So gamification elements, some of the gamification elements are things like leaderboards, rewards, badges, some sort of store, Easter eggs. These are kind of gamification elements that keep users engaged. From a business standpoint, you know, you have to use something that is related to business. So KPIs, which, you know, are key performance indicators, are where we start our gamification process. So there are certain behaviors. We basically reverse engineer your bottom line, right? Your the most important KPI, which is profit, right? And so we work backwards from there that you need revenues to generate profit and there's expenses. And we focus on the revenues and what behaviors or results lead to the revenue. And in a call center, for example, you need to make phone calls and you need to contact a consumer and you need to, you know, be able to close a deal. And, you know, that deal maybe has some elements in it that's broken down even further into other different KPIs. So we identify or help the businesses identify those KPIs that drive your business objectives. And then we create challenges for those. So, you know, and we create rank levels. So, you know, we understand that, you know, a person just starting is not going to be expected to do the same thing as somebody that's been there for 2 or 3 years. And so we set reasonable expectations and on a daily basis. And so just like we, you know, there's variable rewards, there's also should be variable challenges. So every day there's a new challenge, is picking different KPIs and different behaviors that you want to push in that direction. And as they're completing these challenges and these goals and these milestones, they're earning rewards. We've got multiple rewards. So XP being one of the main drivers. And if you're into gaming, you know, XP stands for experience points, and that drives your rank level. So as you're getting promoted, your challenges are getting more difficult, but your rewards are getting higher. And so, and then also the recognition is more because you're getting badges that showing that, hey, you're an all-star or you're a superstar or, you know, even greater, which is the legend status. And so that's part of the experience that we're trying to create. It's very similar to the video games that are out there in the marketplace. And, you know, we're borrowing things from Fortnite. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that game.
Oh, yeah. But
it's 14-year-old son, and I can't tell you how many dollars, real dollars, I spent on fake dollars that he used to buy skins and emotes, which are basically dance moves. And we're borrowing from that. We've actually got an avatar system so everybody can create their own personality and their own likeness, and their rewards they can use to purchase in our reward store to upgrade that avatar. So, you know, we're really borrowing from that video game mindset, you know, because that's what they grew up on. That's what they understand. So let's leverage to keep them engaged at work.
That's fascinating. I mean, you know, I'm Gen X, I guess you, is that about you?
Yeah, we got the same gray hair.
Yeah, we got the same grays. Yeah. So you got more hair than I do. I got none. So, but like, you know, I see that in my current life. Like I have a Peloton, so the leaderboard on the Peloton, the, you know, they do badges. The badges don't do much for me personally, but the leaderboard is incredible. Like the way it works is pretty amazing, you know, because it has all time riders for any given ride, and you can compete with, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 people around the world by age group, by, you know, male, female, all that kind of stuff. And that's certainly like very effective. Like my goal is always, you know, top five, top 10% on any ride. That's the gamification part for me. If I can hit that, I feel like I had a good ride. Like the badges don't do much, but and then I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, man, even Home Depot does this in Lowe's with their aprons and the badges that they give people to put on their badges.
Swag, yeah.
And then like GoRuck is another one that has the patch system where you can get patches if you do certain events and all those kind of things. So it's not just digital. Like this stuff works.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, brick and mortar. I mean, it's gamification has been around for a long time. I mean, it's nothing new. Competition is part of our human nature. You know, we want to be the best, you know, and we want that recognition that we're the best. We want other people to tell us we're the best. We don't want to just say we're the best. You know, we want proof. And, you know, that's another thing that we provide is that transparency. And like you said, leaderboards is part of that transparency, showing it. And it's, you know, it's empirical data that we're using. It's very objective. You know, there's no subjective decisioning here where a manager says, you know what, I like you and I think you're really doing good, so you're the best. You know, everybody's on the same playing field, you know, playing the same game with the same point system. One of the things that we've learned in our research, and we've been able to prove it internally here, is that there is competition, but this new generation actually prefers to work collaboratively towards a common goal as opposed to competing against one another, you know, to see who's the best. So, you know, there's a lot of contests that we've done in the past where we said, hey, hit this goal and you guys all get to go home early paid. And 95% of the time they would hit that goal. And we did our further research when we were building out this gamification platform, and we found that it's not unique to just our environment. Most of this younger generation, even the older generation, our generation, you know, also likes to work as a team and collaborate on common goals.
That makes sense. I got a lot of so many different questions. I'll let Jonathan.
It makes me think of the, and I was trying to think of the Netflix series that's on right now that we were talking about recently, Sean, the cult, and I can't remember the name of their group, but anyway, it's fascinating because they use, you know, gamification as part.
Was it the Vow?
Yeah, it's the Vow. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating documentary. If you get a chance, Jimmy, it's.
Yeah, they use like colored sashes. And,
yeah. Because you go to different levels, and it's like you get to a certain level and you get a different color sash and you get a stripe on that sash. It's like a lot of like martial arts, but they.
Or military.
Or military, right, exactly. So you move up the ranks as you show your loyalty and you commit more of your time and more of your energy. Which ends up being, you start to find out, like people just exhaust themselves at the level of commitment that they make, you know, to this cult. But once they're so exhausted, they say, you know, how they come about to I guess, energize them even more to continue on is like, hey, look at how far you've come and look at what you've accomplished. And you're so valuable to this team. And you know, they give them incentives to move forward. So it's amazing. I mean, it's obviously incentives can be used in the right way, obviously in companies, and gamification can be used in the right way. But we're also saying it's just like anything in life, things can be used to manipulate people and things can be used for good too, to incentivize people. So it's a question of who the person is or the organization is behind that.
Yeah. It's a tough thing to balance, to do it the right way and to make it, to have longevity, right? For it to be effective term,
right.
Because it can get very, very old very quickly. So, you know, this was born because I was in the call center space, you know, for 12 years. And, you know, I developed this over the years in my own environment, just for my own purpose. And it evolved so much that we took it to market. But one of the things that we tried to address is that how games or contests became old and ineffective. Mm-hmm. One of the things that would happen is you would have these contests and the same, you know, three or four people would win all the contests because they were the highest skill, the depth, and everybody else would be demotivated by it. So you would try to change it up and say, you know what we're going to do is we're going to give everybody an opportunity for every deal you close, you get a raffle ticket. We have a Chinese auction at the end, so everybody has an opportunity to win. You know, the more effective you are, the more opportunities you have. And then you get somebody at the low end of the totem pole wins the big prize, and then everybody else is pissed. So, you know, it's hard to make everybody happy. And so what we developed is, you know, you built this budget and you create these micro games with micro rewards.
Yeah.
That, you know, that they build up over a period of time, you know, alongside of the recognition tools, alongside of the badging systems, alongside of the social engagement, you know, they build their rewards up and then they begin to pick their reward in the reward store based on their preference.
Right.
So you're not giving away Bills tickets to somebody who just hates football, you know, winds up selling them for a fraction of the price, devaluing the whole purpose of the contest. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot to keeping, you know, the novelty of gamification alive for a long period of time. So it's one of the things that variation is important.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, a couple of things came to mind. First of all, like I would have to say, I would think this makes like quarterly performance reviews or annual reviews so much easier for a manager.
100%.
Because it's like you've got actual data there.
Yeah, we used to have a term or a tagline called micromanagement without the micromanaging, because you just give the tools over to the agents and you say, here's what we're measuring, here's where you measure against those measurements, and here's where you measure against your peers. And so, you know, there's clear transparency into an insight into all of your data and your expectations. So when it comes to have that conversation, you know, there's no questions like, what, I never even knew. You've known this whole time because you've been looking at it every day and we update you on what you need to do every single day. So, the reviews are, are very simple. It's basically a sign off. Because
that'd be amazing. Like right now, I manage a team of about 10 people, and that would just be amazing to. Because so much of the reviews, the traditional reviews, are subjective, and I mean you have KPIs, but there's a lot of subjectivity in it. Sure. And if your manager's having a bad day on review day, I mean, like, you know, you're gonna have a bad review. I mean, you just are.
Yeah. It's funny you said that. You know, I never trusted my managers to do things objectively. And I knew that it was based a lot on relationships that they had with each employee. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that was fair to everybody because, you know, not everybody is extroverted and social. And, you know, some of your best people can be introverted and very, you know, non-social, and they can be looked at as, hey, these aren't friendly people, so I don't want them on my team. Right. And you lose good people. So, you know, by using at least 80% of the score as data driven, then, you know, of course there's, you know, that other 20%, you know, how are they on the floor? How are they, you know, with relationships with their peers? Those are all very important, and you need some sort of subjectiveness to that as well.
Yeah. I like the fact that you said they're looking at it every day. Mm-hmm. Like most people don't think about their quarterly review until it's quarterly review time, you know, managers included. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're looking every day just automatically means it's going to get better. Like you're just,
yeah.
I mean, that's just what you measure improves, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. So I'm curious, Jimmy, like when you went through this, jumping back to the article a little bit, mm-hmm. I'm curious what stuck out for you that you're like, that's something I could use in a more positive way. Was there anything like that you saw as you were reading through? Because I know, you know, you're always improving your systems and things. Like something had to jump out at you, like maybe I could use that, or maybe just not. I'm just curious.
No, you're right, 100%. Even though, again, like I said, when I first read it, I was like, man, this is ominous. And that's what I think of. Like, how dark is this? How does it relate to me and my? But you're right. I looked at some of the things because. You're borrowing from everything that works, right? That's right. What we do is we borrow. Some people, you know, want to use the term you steal, but I like the term borrow. And what I found in this that I thought was very, I don't want to say curious, but interesting was the community, right? And how the community drive the, just kind of the excitement level of it. And also the, credibility of it, because they're getting recognition by their peers, and it starts to evolve. The bigger the community, the larger the community, the bigger the idea, and the more it sticks. And, you know, if, like, I think it even mentioned it in there somewhere where it said, if it's just one person saying it, nobody's listening, then, you know, it doesn't have any, right. It doesn't have traction. But the more people say it, the more it grows, the more the idea grows. It actually reminded me of the movie Inception a little bit, you know, how you have to plant the seed to make it their idea and make it seem like they're the one that thought about it. That was another piece there is how do we make it that their career is based on their not necessarily idea, but their commitment to achieving their career goals. You just got to give them that path and let them define the path. And the more that they're committed to that definition and committed to the journey and committed to the ultimate goal, the more they're going to stay committed to the organization. And so that was another component that I felt that, you know, it's definitely something that we can leverage in the development of our application.
Yeah, you just mentioned Sean's favorite movie, by the way.
Yeah, my favorite marketing movie is definitely Inception. Like, to me, that is the ultimate idea of marketing, is to make whatever you're selling feel like their idea.
Their idea. To buy. Absolutely. Right?
And I was actually talking to one of my guys today. And we were talking about this and like extrinsic versus intrinsic motivation. And I was like, I was trying to tell him, like, if you can figure out what their intrinsic motivation is and then tie it to the, what you need done, you'll get a lot further than trying to constantly, you know, help, you know, hold them accountable or externally motivate them with, you know, prizes or, you know, time off or whatever. Right. If you can find out what their intrinsic motivation is, then it just, you know, it feeds itself. The other thing I was thinking as you were talking there was like, as far as community, one of the cool things on Peloton is how you can give each other high fives during a ride. And that makes a huge difference. I mean, you know, you tend to find yourself kind of in the same pack during the ride. because you're all about, you know, there's so many people on the ride. There's a good 20, 30 riders that you're kind of around for 20, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever your ride is. So you kind of keep high fiving those people. They high five you. And it's just, it kind of, and you don't, once you high five, it's like this weird thing. Like you think, you know, them.
Yeah. No,
like you need to perform. You can't fall way back and you know,
you got to stay in the pack, right?
Yeah, you got to stay in there. Like, and,
we actually have that same feature. It's part of, so we have a leaderboard. We have a public display board that broadcasts events. So every time somebody closes a deal, reaches a milestone, meets a challenge, there's an opportunity for all of their peers to interact, you know, through, and we keep the comments fixed so that way, you know, there's no liability. But they can like each other, they can comment, they can say way to go, you know, some of the fix, or they can use emojis. But same thing, like whether it's a pound, a high five. But that peer recognition, and I'm sure that you felt the same way. If somebody high fives you, there's that feeling of, I need to reciprocate that, right? So I'm looking out for his back now, and I'm going to support that person because they supported me. And that creates and builds community and camaraderie, which is really hard to develop in a culture, especially in a call center space, especially in a space where there's high attrition, where there's new people sitting next to you all the time. So when you build that, and even in the new workforce, which is more remote, how do you keep that engagement? You know, it's through those interactions. And so it's an important part of gamification are those interactions and that support tool.
Well, you know, it goes back to the idea too of, you know, just the fact that there's an observer changes the dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know somebody's watching you on the leaderboard because they give you a high five, now you know they're watching.
Yeah.
You perform differently. Like it changed the observer changes the action. I mean, that's an old, I think that's from journalism, I think. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no such thing as a, you know, an observer that doesn't influence. I mean, you can go all the way to quantum physics and the double slit experiment and all that kind of stuff. Sure. Like, just observation changes the dynamics of the
sure
whatever you're observing.
Well, take working out, for example, right? What's the difference between working out by yourself or with a workout partner or a trainer, right? You've got an observer. It's easy to give up. Like, you know what? I'll just get it on the next set. Yeah. You got somebody watching, you know, whether they're pushing you or not, they're watching, you know, it helps you motivate you to get to that, to complete the level.
Yes. Like, are they counting reps or can I cheat this rep? Or are they counting? I better do one more just in case they're counting.
Yeah. Your partner is counting.
I mean, that's one reason CrossFit, I think has been powerful over the last 10, 20 years. Cause you would never push that hard by yourself, and the fact that other people are doing it, there's a clock, they've done a great job of, I think, gamification as well with all their
the games, you know, their workouts. CrossFit games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their competitions. Cause they refer to themselves as athletes now. I mean, so they're actually competing, you know, they're part of it. They're competing in a game. So
have you ever done CrossFit?
Oh yeah. I did it for 4 or 5 years. It's a whole new level of, it's a different kind of suck. Yeah. I don't agree with everything. I think sometimes it's too much too often. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should have to go that hard every day. It's just
it's
changing to your body, I think. But I mean, if you want to get into shape quick,
it's great for that. And if you can learn how to take a day off, because it is a community. So you kind of get addicted to, especially now, like with more remote work in the areas that you can get out. Mm-hmm. Like you want to go see people and you want to work out with people because you need it. So I was down that road for a while. I do some other crazy stuff now, but I do the Peloton obviously. And then I do this weird electro stim treatment where you wear a full body electrode suit and it shocks you for 15 minutes basically.
Other people holding the shocker doing it for you.
They have a little thing that it's a whole system that it's like, you know, 7 to 10 seconds on and then 4 to 6 seconds off, and you're doing movements while you're doing it. It's pretty wild. Nice. So it's crazy. Whole nother show. But so is there anything else that stood out for you, Jimmy, in that article that you're like, I could use that for good and not evil?
I'm curious about Easter eggs. So we hear a lot about Easter eggs. You know, people talk about them in movies and pop culture. My kids use that phrase a lot, you know. So you know, I've gotten used to it, but
sure.
Yeah. What are you referring to? You know, Easter eggs. These are things that really kind of, they're like puzzles, right? I mean, that people are trying to constantly kind of read into and figure out.
Yeah, I think that's part of the mystery, right? And the puzzle solving and the hunt, right? So the Easter egg refers back to the Easter egg hunt, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, we've all had them as kids. If you have kids, you've done it for your kids, where you go out there and you hide Easter eggs all around the backyard or wherever. Yeah. And there's one golden one usually that has the biggest, you know, $20 bill or whatever have you.
Right.
And people want to find that one. And that one you hide in the most difficult place to find, right? So, and that's the whole idea of the Easter egg is the hunt is never over. Like you're always searching and you're searching for that big one. And so Easter egg hunts is another way to keep users engaged. You know, Sean, I think you said it earlier. How do you not let it wear out? How do you keep it, you know, fresh and engaging so that way they don't get bored with it over time? And that's one way. And it also is part of the community. People are talking about this Easter egg. Hey, did you look over here? No, I didn't. I'm going to go check that out. And hey, there's a way to break through that wall. You know, for us, it's about the way we use the Easter eggs is, you know, we use what we call treasure chests. So, you know, we allow them to get treasure chests in mysterious different ways in mysterious places so that they have to go to different areas of the application to get those chests. Mm-hmm. And that helps, you know, with them learning more about the application, because this is, you got to remember, we're trying to find that, strike that balance between fun and engaging and then distracting, because we're selling this tool to a business, you know, so that they can keep their people engaged. You don't want to go too far where, look, these people aren't working. They're just on your app all day, you know? So you have to tie it with their work, but at the same time, try to strike that balance. And, but carrying that beyond just work where they can go home and go on the phone app and then go searching for that Easter egg hunt, again, builds that brand recognition, builds that kind of addictive quality or habit forming qualities, I like to say, where they want to stay engaged with the application, which should translate to they want to stay engaged at work. And, you know, that'll give us benefit.
Yeah. That keeps them, that keeps their attention, you know, drawn to it. I'm going to read this excerpt because this is fascinating just to follow up with what you said. So from this article, he says, there's no reality here, no actual solution in the real world. Instead, this is a breadcrumb away, trail away from reality, away from actual solutions towards a dangerous psychological rush. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But it says it works very well because when you figure it out yourself, you own it. You experience the thrill of discovery, the excitement of a rabbit hole, or the rabbit hole, the acceptance of community that loves and respects you. That's another element, because you were convinced to connect the dots yourself. You can see the absolute logic of it, This is the conclusion you arrive at. So, you know, there's a lot to that, but it talks about the psychological rush of, you know, actually figuring something out, of discovering something. I think that that's kind of part of what addicts people, not only in video games, in any kind of game, but also in conspiracy theories, is that like, oh, wait, I figured something out. I figured out a clue because I'm involved, you know, instead of just being fed something. I think what's different about this, Sean, you mentioned other conspiracies in the past. And I think what's different a little about, you know, maybe this as opposed to other things in the past is that this is told people like to use your own or kind of research yourself and try to start figuring out, which is kind of addictive in itself. You start figuring things out. It leads you from down one rabbit hole to the next. And you think, you know, when you feel like you figured something out, people congratulate, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they congratulate you and say, yeah, you've done a great job. Now you got to move on to the next one, you know? So,
which goes back to kind of what we've talked about, you know, hundreds of times on this show is like, then it makes you feel safe, makes you feel part of the Absolutely. Tribe. You're not getting kicked out of the tribe because you're a valuable member.
Right.
Like all that stuff that it goes back to.
Yep.
Your thoughts, Jimmy?
I mean, it's again, the difference between when you're building games, right? There are boundaries. You're set to boundaries. I mean, you can stretch those boundaries, but you're still inside of boundaries.
Sure.
Right.
And the users know that there are boundaries. You know, it's hard to create a dynamic game that has limitless possibilities with no end in sight. With life such as this, you know, the designers, I'll put that in quotes, or whoever's doing the manipulation, you know, it's a very dynamic world that changes all the time. So there's new clues that that they find and then they lead you to, right? So, and that's the difference between persuasion and manipulation, right? So I want to persuade you to do better in work at work. So I'm going to provide you engaging tools to help you get there because it's going to benefit you, your family, and the business.
Right.
Where manipulation is more of, hey, I want you to come this way. And again, the maliciousness of it, again, I don't know the purpose. And so I can't speak specifically about what their purpose is, but it seems like it's an endless game. There is no getting out of that rabbit hole.
Right.
And I know a lot of people who, you know, they'll send me links. I mean, who are huge QAnon followers and like, check this out, check this out. It's like, all right.
Yeah, I have to say I tapped out when it started being everything was related. I was like, look, this group can't control everything.
Sure.
Like, it's just not practical or possible. Like, you can't control chemtrails and this and that and that and that. Right. Like, it's not all connected. Nobody's
right.
I mean, you know how hard it is to manage a committee. Like, I can't imagine, like, there's no way a group of human beings.
That's right.
To keep all that straight. Like, it's just impossible.
It's difficult.
I don't know about you, Jimmy, but Sean and I were in the, we worked for the guy. We were in the military for quite a few years, and we know the military is not that organized sometimes, a lot of times, you know, so we laugh at that sometimes, realizing that there's a lot of snafus that happen in planning, a lot, you know, that happen in the military and in government. So it's just crazy that they can assign so much sovereignty over something that's so, you know, fallible, and, you know, it's a bunch of humans running it. So it's going to be their mistakes.
We could get it, like, you know, there's all kinds of reasons, I think, why this is so prevalent now. And I think it's, I listened to a podcast one time that talked about, like, you know, politics became the new religion because people were leaving the churches and they didn't have that to stand on. So then they went to politics, and now politics is kind of crumbling. And, like, so the reason conspiracy theories and these things take hold is because people need something to believe in.
Yeah.
And the bigger it is, the more it explains.
Yeah.
And I think that's why this particular one has just grown like crazy, is because if it covers everything, then everything's covered. Mm-hmm. And there's some safety, there's some peace, as crazy as that is, in that. So, I mean,
yeah, but there's safety in, I don't know if I would call it peace, because, I mean,
it's a sadistic form of peace for sure, but it's
an expectation that this is going to come to an end. And I think that's one of the big drivers in the most recent days, that something is going to happen. Something's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And then it doesn't. They're waiting for this to happen, and then it doesn't. And then this is going to happen, and then it doesn't. So I think you're going to see a lot of people start to fall off that wagon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because you can only move the goalpost so far until the goalpost gets moved off the and then, off the field.
What's the proverb say? A hope deferred makes the heart sick. Like, you push that hope out far enough, and people just, they can't take it anymore.
Exactly.
You know, then they go look for the next thing.
Right,
what's the next thing to hang their hat on? So,
from a positive standpoint, on, you know, gaming, what is the most, if you can pull, let's talk about what, like, the most addictive qualities to any game that people kind of, like, keeps people, because you talked about you kind of hinted on this, like, you know, the challenge in any gamification, even from a positive standpoint in business, is keeping people in the game, right? So, you know, and you probably hinted on this, what do you think is the most, in your opinion, is the most addictive quality to a game that can be used in a positive way for business, applied to business, and to keep people engaged? Because, you know, as you mentioned, younger generations today, they kind of need that. So to keep them on board.
I have a 14-year-old son, and you know, I watch him play video games. You know, we used to play. I remember. I mean, I grew up a gamer. You know, I was on Atari, Nintendo, Genesis, and you know, all the way through. And then I got old enough where I had to kind of focus on work. So I wasn't addicted to it, but I grew up on it. And so even when my son was young, I'd give him a controller and he'd think he'd play. And one day I turned the controller on and he actually was playing. But I followed his kind of trajectory on games. And one of the coolest new things about video games, which it's cool, but it's also dangerous, is, when we had to go, when we wanted to play with our friends, we'd have to pick a house and go to that house and play together. Right. You'd have to have, two controllers, or you get the multi-tap and you get four controllers, and now they can play online. Right. And, you know, multi-user across the world. So they're at home, they got their headphones. what that does is it builds a different sort of community. Right. And I think when you ask the question, what is the biggest advantage or part of it is community. I think we're so disengaged and distracted and in our own little world with technology this is a good way to at least have some human interaction. Even if you are using technology, I don't think technology is ever going to be avoidable. Go to the woods, go camping, disconnect, leave your phones in the cars. But when you're at work, you're using technology to work, unless you're in a trade. And so building that community, having that engagement, those interactions, even if it is with technology, now with remote work, where people are now, pulled apart and put into their own little environments, you need that community. And I think that part of gamification is probably positive.
Yeah. I've got two teenagers like you. I've got a 15 to 17. My 17 doesn't play games. He used to play games. He doesn't play. My 15-year-old still plays, but the only games that he plays are ones not, he doesn't care about things that he plays on his own. He likes to compete with other people, and he likes to talk to them while he's playing. So, you can hear him at night. And I actually think that, I think that's pretty good, because a lot of the games that he plays are strategy games and they're teamwork type games. Whereas, those are kind of helping. They're sometimes they're talking smack, and sometimes they're, just rambling and, do what teenagers do. But a lot of times they're working. I hear him sometimes in his room, and a lot of it's like teamwork orientation type things. And I'm thinking, that's pretty good. They're actually helping one another kind of beat the other team. So,
and as well, somebody's got to take the leadership role and help lead the team. So somebody's going to step up and you'll develop leadership skills along the way, as well as teamwork skills. So there are a bunch of cool new skills that people are learning online. You just got to recognize them and make sure you steer your children towards those, the positives, because you just don't want them in their room alone all day for 4 hours playing video games. Right. It is nice knowing that they're on with their friends.
Absolutely.
COVID, when they can't go out and play.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. My son's 25 and same thing when he was a little bit young, he still plays and he's got the headset and you can hear him talking and it's not just the game. It's like, they're just talking too while they're playing the game, which, Jonathan, us being in the military, that's how it was when you're out and doing field exercises.
Sleeping under a tree or in a tank or whatever.
But you're talking about whatever, and then action happens and you get engaged, and then that's over, and then you go back to talking a little bit. But it does build a cool community. We've got another, I'll let our next guest know we're about 5 minutes late, but we need to go ahead and wrap up, Jonathan. So,
well, Jimmy, it's been a pleasure. We appreciate you coming on today. And how can people find out more about your company, some of the work you guys do, if you would share that?
Yeah, go to www.playzizzo.com. And that's play and then Z-I-Z-O, which just so you guys know, Zizzo stands for zoom in, zoom out. It's the ability to manage from the clouds up above the forest and then drill down into the granularness of data and get the details to help your people out. So playzizzo.com, more information there. They got links to all of our social media sites on the website itself. So Sean and John, I appreciate you guys having me on the podcast here. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you guys in other podcasts.
It's been a blast. Thank you.
And fun.
We'll post the link on our show page. Jimmy, as always, thank you again for coming on, and We'll talk to you. Like Sean said, we got another guest coming up, but I'll be reaching out to you by email. Once we get this link posted, I'll be sending it over your way.
You got it. Thank you, John.
Okay. All right, take care. Thanks again. Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, man, we could talk all day about that, I think.
Yep.
As usual.
As usual. But yeah, we've got another show to do. So as always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your social media platforms. And thanks again to all of our listeners. Sean, it's been fun. We'll see you on the next episode.
See ya.